Looking Forward.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Looking Forward with me, Svetlana Yakimenko.
And with me, Victor Arafeev. Hello, everyone.
You know, Victor, it's a very curious fact, but apparently, for the first time in modern history, Asia is now becoming richer than Europe and is even catching up with North America. There's some data to confirm this.
Incredible.
But we knew this was going to happen. There was this trend. It was pretty obvious.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, for us here in Russia, we had a long tradition of thinking that Asia, it is something dusty, far away, and very far from us, and something that you could enjoy like exotic things, but not like a real partner. But now you are right, something is changing.
The trend has been emerging for quite some time, and now, apparently by the year, 2019, they're saying, the region's wealth is going to reach $75 trillion as compared to $63 trillion in North America. It's quite amazing, really. But apparently, they're saying that India is going to even outstrip China.
But you know, when we say Asia, it means all countries of Asia.
Well, of course, but you have to take them all individually because they're so very different.
Yeah, and still there is a big contrast, you know, when I was traveling in China.
Been to China?
Yes, I've been several times to China because one of my books was a bestseller in China. And when I got reviews, it was just so many reviews they wrote. I couldn't just take them home, you know. It's amazing because if they start to do something, the scales are incredible for us. But still I enjoy China very much, especially Shanghai. It's amazing, you know, how many big houses skyscrapers built. And just,
I've heard so many people saying that Shanghai is absolutely mind-boggling.
Yes, it's just amazing. After that, just to compare, New York is just a provincial city.
Really? Yes, is it that amazing?
It's incredible.
What aspect particularly struck you when you first came there?
Well, I think that how quickly they do it.
Everything.
Yes. It means that only 15 years ago, nothing was there. And, you know, they ruined some parts of traditional Shanghai, and probably it's a pity that we've done it. But at the same time, you know, that was a poor city, and that's why when you ruin with poverty, it is not so bad. But when you enter these big houses with skyscrapers, you understand that they are so clean, they are so magic that you do not have such opportunity to see them in Europe or in the United States, because I don't even know why they are so clean, when they are shining with cleanness.
What about the mentality? I mean, do you think that the mentality of people of the region affects to a great extent their tempo, the pace of growth?
Now, this is a difficult question. I suppose yes and no. Because from one side, when you take a flight from Peking to, let's say, to Shanghai, you see people, middle-class people, they're like in all European countries, well-dressed, very quiet. They read newspapers, books, and, of course, iPads on their flight. And you understand that something really has changed, because in our imagination, Asia is full of very, let's say, active people with very strange gestures, you know, just because for us, they are very expressive. And they are very quiet, you know. They look
reserved.
Reserved, yes. They look cool, I would say. This is impressive. But from the other side, you know, now I travel a lot from Moscow to Berlin, and on this flight there are a lot of Asian people who just go to you through Moscow, via Moscow. And I would say that some tourists, they are still, I think, from the poorer parts of China, and they're not so cool as I could imagine they have to be.
Apart from China, have you been to any other countries of the region? I mean,
yes.
I went to Singapore, in fact, lived there for quite a while.
Well, tell me more about that.
Have you been to Singapore?
No.
Ah, well, similarly, I was absolutely stunned by the place. I mean, it's tiny, of course, but it is, of course, one of the most amazing success stories of the 20th century, because when you think back to where they were in the beginning and the amazing breakthrough they achieved. But that, of course, to a great extent was due to one particular person, of course, the late Lee Kuan Yew. But he was an amazing man. He was the founder of modern day Singapore. What amazed me about Singapore, of course, was the balance of the domestic sectors, which are doing amazingly well. That would be, of course, shipbuilding there and the electronics and the banking system and healthcare and housing and all the social services. Although there's always a downside, and the downside there, of course, was they were losing the original flavor of the place, you know, with the Chinese and population there and with Little India, a sector within Singapore. That was all being downplayed, and you were feeling the American influence a bit too much for my taste.
Well, you know, the same in Shanghai, you know, as I just told you that who knows when you ruin this old town. You lose, of course, a lot of things, but at the same time, you lose poverty. It's good, you know. And I was in India 3 times, and I saw this progress, really incredibly fantastic progress, when from, let's say, from the district like Calcutta, it's an immense city, but it's very poor. And then you understand that suddenly appears something else. But not like China. But
yeah, well,
still.
India is apparently taking great strides, and yeah. The IMF is forecasting that Delhi will even take the lead. But that, of course, is a lot has to do with the recent policy of reforms that has been launched there. And joining us on the show now is Anne Lee, who is Adjunct Professor of Economics and Finance at New York University and also author of the book, What the U.S. Can Learn from China.
Looking forward.
Hello, Anne. Welcome to the show. Now, the Asia-Pacific region has overtaken Europe in terms of global wealth management for the first time, becoming the world's second wealthiest region with $47 trillion. That's according to a report released by Boston Consulting Group. And it's set to overtake North America, possibly next year. So my first question is, why now? And what are the principal growth drivers in the Asia-Pacific region?
Well, the big elephant driving Asian growth, obviously, is China's economic growth. The Chinese government over, you know, these last few decades has instituted a number of programs to liberalize the economy so that creates a lot of opportunity for all kinds of businesses. And they've continued to reform their economies so that new opportunities keep coming up. And therefore, it keeps generating wealth as people take advantage of these new opportunities. And so combined with the fact that there's been relatively peaceful situations in Asia Pacific compared to the past, there was war there before with the Korean War, the Vietnamese War, and all sorts of other wars, and then China's own civil wars. Now that that's all in the past, and they've had some peace, that also provides the groundwork for them to achieve economic growth and accumulate wealth quickly. And so that combined with the fact that, you know, you have probably more governments that are maybe less corrupt than in the past, that's also helped. So all these factors, I think, has really boosted the region's economic power and wealth.
To what extent have lower oil prices affected the Asia-Pacific region?
It certainly has helped. Whenever your energy prices are lower, then it's just much easier to, you know, conduct business. It's the cost of doing business is lower. But I would certainly say that that's not essential to their economic growth. Even if oil prices were higher, you know, with the right incentives and policies in place, they could still achieve high growth.
Now, we can see that the most vibrant financial centers in the region, Hong Kong, Singapore, are likely set to strengthen their positions. But what about the prospects of such centers in Shanghai, Beijing, Seoul, maybe Delhi?
Hong Kong and Singapore will continue to be major financial centers because they have a very liberal financial market and system there. Shanghai, Beijing, you know, they're trying to liberalize and become more open to capital inflows with their currencies and other areas, but it's still relatively closed. And this latest stock market rout will probably slow down their efforts in show market liberalization. So as they try to stabilize it more, this will certainly postpone the idea that Shanghai will rival Hong Kong or Singapore anytime soon. But I think that over time, as the regulators understand how to work with the markets and it becomes more mature, then certainly over time, they can be other major financial centers.
The rise of the middle class in Asia's rapid growth markets will result in a growing demand for Asia-tailored products. What impact will this have on regional and global trade?
I would say that this is going to be huge overall. It'll benefit everybody as the middle class grows in Asia. You're adding, you know, hundreds of millions of new consumers to the world demand, and therefore it creates jobs elsewhere around the world as they try to service that demand, as they come up with new products and services to export to this middle class. It would certainly boost the economy overall around the world. And since most of these folks in the middle class require cheaper products, then, you know, this also helps the lower to middle income classes around the world as well, as they have access to more, you know, affordable products.
Now, although America is still the country with the most millionaires in the world, of the 2 million new millionaire households created last year, 62%, though, are from Asia Pacific. So how attractive does this make the region as a destination for private wealth managers?
Well, I think it makes it hugely attractive. With so many new millionaires created every year, you know, certainly the best financial institutions are going to take advantage of it. And some of them in Hong Kong and Singapore have already taken advantage of this rising wealthy class. And so I don't see this trend reversing. I would say that as they become even more innovative, that's going to even generate more wealthy families for them to service.
Well, Anne, thank you very much for joining us on the show. So, and we can see a lot happening in India in the future. Yep, that's going to be a region to, well, that's going to probably even overtake China. We'll see what happens. It's going to be very curious watching them.
Yeah. And again, we have to think about Japan, because Japan was the first to show us that Asia is not traditional Asia, but Asia is full of economical power and full of ideas. And it was amazing. And, you know, look, in Moscow, probably it's a day-by-day level, but we love now to go to Japanese restaurants. It's a part of our life. And, you know, when someone is going to marry someone and he or she invites to a Japanese restaurant, it's just like to say that I love you. It's funny.
I think the Asian tigers, as they call them, are going to be very much in the public eye, and we can expect a lot from them in the future.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Very popular travel destination, definitely.
Yes, of course. It's a beautiful country. If you travel through China, it's so beautiful, especially in the south. Oh, my goodness.
I think the competition between these Asian countries is going to be also another motivating, driving force, boosting them forward.
Yeah, and I think for us in Russia, it's very good that Asia is developing so good in all ways.
Traditionally had very strong ties with that region.
Yeah, sure, of course. And for us, India, for instance, was a country of magic culture. We took a lot from Eastern culture. We took a lot from Eastern habits. We even do not know how much we have inside us, all these Asian, Eastern traditions.
Yes, we have this very potent mix inside of us.
Which is very good for the culture. And I think our reactions, when I notice such a thing that, you know, on the superficial life, when everything is fine, we are more Europeans, but we have some problems in our lives, some bad things, we start to act in an Asian way, means we have more reflections, you know. We do it in a way that we could find it in the Chinese or Japanese stories.
So what you're saying is we're very open to these influences, and it's a good thing.
No, it's a bit, I think it's very good. I think that we do not use it properly in all ways, because sometimes we do not know that we have it. But if we start to think and we could develop it, it's very good. It will be very good. So I think that development, real development, cultural development, economic development, Asia is important not only for Russia, but for the whole world.
Well, on that note, we've reached the end of this edition of Looking Forward. I'm Svetlana Yakimenko.
And I'm Viktor Efim. I wish all the best to our audience. Bye-bye.